You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Warriors. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News. Make sure to follow Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get podcasts for episodes every day, Monday through Friday, as well as on YouTube. We are live on YouTube, thanks to everybody who has already subscribed to our new YouTube channel where you can watch the podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. And welcome to La Tuesdays with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, thanks so much for joining me, as you do almost every week at this time of the week. We've got a lot to get to. I want to talk to you about DeAndre Ayton and how he might be a role model for James Wiseman. I want to talk to you about the NBA draft a little bit and how the Warriors can nail the number 7 pick in particular, and then we'll get to the Tuesday trivia to end the show. But I want to start with the latest on Damian Lillard, because you're from Portland, your family's from Portland, and so I'm basically just using that as an excuse to talk to you about Damian Lillard and the latest that's going on with him. Of course, the Trailblazers are hiring Chauncey Billups to be the head coach. Lillard had wanted Jason Kidd. According to reports, he's cool with Chauncey Billups being hired there, but it feels like things are rocky between him and that organization, and in particular Neil Olshey. And I think it just begs the question, what's next for Damian Lillard? Do you expect Damian Lillard to be in Portland next year?
I don't know. I mean, I will say this. I know Chris Haynes pretty well. He was obviously on the Warriors beat for a couple of years, my first couple of years on the beat, so I got to know him pretty well. And he is as well connected with Damian Lillard as any journalist out there. And if he's reporting something like this about Damian, you've got to believe that it's coming directly from Damian and his camp, which means that Damian wants this out there. Mm-hmm. So it almost feels like a kind of a subtle way of not necessarily asking for a trade, but just, you know, a couple notches below that of just making his intentions clear. Like, I'm not happy. I may want out, so you better get on my page here or we're going to have some real issues. I think that I saw a couple interesting tweets this morning about that situation that I thought hit it on the head. Basically, Damian is someone who's never had to deal with any public outcry. He's never had to deal with Portlanders disliking him. He's absolutely beloved there for good reason. He represents the city well. He represents the team well. Obviously, he's solidified himself as the greatest player in franchise history. But he got a lot of flack for reportedly supporting the Billups hire and advocating for Billups to be hired. And obviously, Billups has a sexual assault on his resume, unfortunately, going back to 1997, I think his rookie year in the NBA. And so that's always been something that's kind of that he's kind of carried with him throughout his career. And obviously in any potential job situations, even when he was mentioned as a potential GM candidate with the Cavs and things like that. But Damian has said he wasn't aware of that. And that he probably wouldn't, it sounds like he wouldn't necessarily have been supportive of Billups had he been aware of that. And I can't fault Damian for that. I'll be honest, I wasn't super aware of it until this past week yeah. when it started to be mentioned a lot more in connection with this potential Portland hire. I don't even remember it being mentioned much in connection with GM possibilities.
Right.
So,
I mean, I heard, I remember first hearing about it in 2017 when he was a candidate for that Cavs GM, president of basketball operations, whatever job title it was. But it didn't stop him from getting a job with Disney. It didn't stop him from getting a job with the Clippers. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that it kind of, maybe Damian Lillard does have a problem with it. It just strikes me that in the basketball world, if it's an allegation like that, and unfortunately, if it's as old as it was, like you said, it happened in the late 90s, it doesn't really seem to deter anybody from getting. I mean, Jason Kidd just got hired at Dallas, and his history is much more checkered than what Chauncey Billups has got going on. So,
yeah, on top of that, Jason Kidd, a coach.
Right.
Or at least he hasn't been. He can be a coach. At least the jury's out on Billups.
Right. And everybody has nothing but good things to say about Billups as far as a leader and all those things. So we could, I think all of this stuff is at play when you consider, okay, what is Damian Lillard's future? Because I have said this for a long time. Warriors fans like the idea of stockpiling draft picks and rookies and assets and moving everything for every big name that becomes available. I just don't know who the real superstar is. If a Warriors fan wants to make that move for a superstar, I've just been, who is it? Who's the superstar? Damian Lillard might be that next superstar. Things change within a second in the NBA. Superstars become available very quickly overnight. And there's this idea out there about Damian Lillard that he wouldn't be the superstar that leaves Portland. I don't really know where that comes from. Just because he has been loyal doesn't mean he always will be quote unquote loyal, right? He has said things in the past like, I want to be with Portland for my entire career and all these things, trailblazer for life. But I mean, every player says that until they demand a trade, right? And well, then yeah, they're not on I that team
I believe he
anymore.
Was being completely genuine. But when you're saying that, you're no not doubt. Saying, I'm going to be in Portland the rest of my career. You're saying, I'd like this to happen. But for this right. to happen and for me to continue to feel this way, obviously it's a two-way relationship. Portland has to do things for me to be happy long-term. You know, like they have to mm-hmm. put a contending team around me. That's kind of implicit. You know, that's understood when someone says something like that. It's not a, you know, resolute, I'm never leaving Portland, no matter what. You know, you got to hold the team accountable too.
And so that's the interesting thing here, because the Billups hire is one thing, right? And if Damian Lillard is cool with Chauncey Billups being a coach, and he sort of co-signed it the way that reports are in some, you know, ESPN, Bleacher Report, both reporting that Damian Lillard co-signed the Billups hire. Chris Haynes, like we talked about, reporting a little bit more rocky waters happening in Portland right now. Whoever the coach is, I don't care how good Chauncey Billups is. Chauncey Billups could be the second coming of Greg Popovich. It won't matter, because what that team needs is to get better defensively. I don't care how good you are, going from the 29th, you know, ranked defense in the league to the top 15 or something is nearly impossible with that roster that they have right now. And the roster is not up to Chauncey Billups. The roster is up to Neil Olshey, and he's still got the guy that's calling the shots and putting that team around Damian Lillard. So Lillard could be like, cool, Chauncey Billups seems like a great guy, great coach, but if this is the team around me, doesn't matter. I want out. And so I don't think that this Billups hire, I would guess it probably doesn't do anything to keep to change Damian Lillard's mind one way or the other. Maybe there's a little bit of a honeymoon phase here. Hey, it sounds like Chauncey really knows what he's talking about. Maybe he can get the most out of this roster or whatever. But you get further and further removed from this hire, and you get into the offseason, and you get into the draft. And if by the end of free agency and the end of this offseason, Lillard's looking around, and he's like, all right, what did you do to improve this roster? And the answer is not much. Then he doesn't have to get traded in the offseason. He could get traded at the beginning of the year, just like James Harden just did, right? Like, as long as it's before the trade deadline, he can get moved. I don't think that this Billups hire does anything to sway Damian Lillard one way or the other.
If anything, it hurts. I mean, I think it backfired for Portland. Mm-hmm. I think Portland was always going to hire Billups, partly because it sounded like Damian was supportive of hiring Billups. If the two guys that Damian wanted were Billups and Jason Kidd, if you're Portland, you're like, okay, well, then we'll go the Billups route. Mm-hmm. I would much rather have Billups than Jason Kidd. And you do have to keep what Damian wants in mind, because he is the franchise and this is a superstar driven league and you need to make him happy. So that matters. And, but I honestly think that once the hire got out there and there was so much blowback to it, I think Damian felt uncomfortable with that. And I think his opinion is evolving, because I do think he probably didn't know about the sexual assault allegation until recently. And, you know, his opinion is evolving, which, you know, you can't fault him for. You know, you can only make judgments on based off the information you have. And if he didn't have that information until now, then, you know, it is what it is.
It could backfire.
But it's unfortunate for Portland. As someone who's from Portland, I've long felt that they needed to part ways with Neil Olshey. Neil Olshey is the problem there. He has bungled several really key off seasons. I feel like he's mishandled a lot of important decisions in the past half decade or so with that franchise. And this is just another example of that. I felt like if you were going to make a major change this offseason, it needed to be parting with Neil O'Shea, not Terry Stotts. I don't think Terry Stotts is like a top five coach in the league or anything, but I don't think he was the problem. I think it was Neil O'Shea. And, you know,
every year there was something.
The decision to keep Neil O'Shea could ultimately be your undoing when it comes to Lillard, which is really unfortunate for Portland.
Every year there was something written about how Terry Stotts was making the most out of Portland's roster. That I'm not saying because it's written it is so, but I'm just like that Terry Stotts did kind of make the most with what he was given.
They made the Western Conference Finals with a really mediocre team a couple years ago.
And you mentioned how this could backfire for Portland. The other way that this – so the interesting dynamic here is if Neil Olshay had a standing relationship with Chauncey Billups from their time in with the Clippers, right? So there was obviously a relationship there. I don't – and so Billups is very much Olshay's guy, which lends – that leads me to believe that Olshay must be pretty stable. His job – must be pretty stable if ownership signed off, because we know that ownership was involved in this coaching hire, right? So ownership must be pretty comfortable with Olshay because they allowed Olshay to hire his guy. The other part about this, too, is that Billups is not taking a rebuilding job, right? He is an assistant with the Clippers right now. There's no reason for him to take a rebuilding gig. He's been offered plenty of head coaching jobs in the past, according to some of these reports. And so he wouldn't take a rebuilding job. He must also believe that Damian Lillard is going to stay, because I don't care what you do, what you trade Lillard for. If he's gone, you are not a championship contender the way that you might think you are if you're Billups. All of that kind of makes me believe, hey, maybe they do feel pretty comfortable with the fact that Lillard is going to be there long term. Now, maybe they feel that way right in this moment. That might not be the case a month from now. Just because you feel good about it now, you still have to nail this offseason in order to, I think, keep convince Lillard to stay long term. If they can't do that, Connor, where do you think the Warriors rank as far as what they could put together as a package? What kind of a Damian Lillard potential destination? If Lillard says, hey, I want out, here's my short list of candidates, and does the all-star thing that all superstars do when they want to be traded, it starts with a Chris Haynes type of report and it goes from there. You get the, hey, I don't want to be traded, but if I did, here are five cities that I'd like to play in. You got to imagine Golden State would be one of those teams, right?
I think Golden State would definitely be in line for sure. They would put together the best package they could for a couple reasons. For one, this is a superstar league. It's all about talent, and having arguably the two best point guards in the league on your team is a pretty tantalizing prospect. And it doesn't hurt that Damian's from Oakland, and you know, the Warriors are still trying to hold on to those Oakland roots a little bit, even though they're in San Francisco now. I actually think that you could make Steph and Damian Lillard coexist because Steph is so good off the ball. I think it could work. They're also both very selfless superstars. And I think there's a world where that could make sense. But in terms of putting together a package that would even get Portland on the
Before we get to that, I want to just sort of agree with what you just said, because I think it would work. And you hear a lot, well, Damian and Steph, like, that's just us, you know, it's the same problem that CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard had in Portland. Like, how could you defend at that level? I don't care. Steph is not CJ McCollum. You could look at what the Brooklyn Nets did, and you can argue if everybody is healthy, if their big three is healthy, they go to the finals this year, right? If you have that kind of offensive firepower, I don't care about defense. And we can live in this world where, oh, I want to watch a team that plays defense. I don't care. If you've got Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, probably the first and second best point guard in the league, I don't care. You're going to score enough points where I don't care about defense. And if you can keep Draymond Green and whoever else, and you could just figure it out. The other thing about Dame is if this, from a PR standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, if he doesn't want to be the guy who left Portland, where he, like you said, never has had any backlash because he's like that. He's somehow been branded as the loyal superstar. If he were to leave and join, say, the Lakers or the Clippers or, you know, a team like that, then all of a sudden he becomes the guy who joined a super team. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be the case if he went to the Warriors, but the Warriors haven't made the playoffs in 2 years, and he's from Oakland. So you could, if you're Damian Lillard's kind of team, PR team, you can label it as, hey, I'm returning home, even though he's never played for the Warriors. You could kind of still keep that loyalty thread going from whatever a branding perspective is. So I do think that that could come into play if you're Damian Lillard and say, hey, I could leave to a super and join a super team, but then also keep this loyalty thread that I've had this my entire career. That's a win-win. And so so I do think that the Warriors would have to be a high on his list. It's also he stays on the West Coast in the Western Conference. He obviously goes back home to Oakland, all these things.
As far as the timeline, I think makes sense for him because you know, you could come in and potentially win a title or two with Steph and Draymond and Klay, and then once Steph gets to the point where he's nearing retirement in a few years, you know, you're the unquestioned guy because he's a few years behind Steph, and you know, you have at least a 3 or 4 year window where you're the unquestioned leader of this team.
Yeah.
You know, because once Steph starts to decline, he'll be the guy, even if Klay and Draymond are playing at a high level still. So I actually think from a timeline perspective, everything you said, it does make sense. I think, you know, and ultimately it's very possible that Dame will kind of get to pick where he goes if it gets to that point. So that's the biggest thing I think the Warriors have going for them.
Yeah. I want to talk about what kind of trade package the Warriors could put on the table. But first, it's time for the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week in sports. If you think joy only happens when you win, think again. Look at the world's most successful athletes. They don't spend all of their days grinding away. They take the time to enjoy themselves, like having a Michelob Ultra with friends, because they know that happiness is the key to winning, and not just the end game, but the whole game. And my player of the week this week, Connor, is a guy that we were going to talk about here in a moment. It's DeAndre Ayton. And I love that moment that after the Phoenix won over the weekend, Chris Paul looks over to DeAndre Ayton and says, we're going to go get this guy paid. And you love that. The way that DeAndre Ayton, over not just his third year in the NBA, but kind of the second half of this season, has sort of blossomed into a guy who easily one of the best five centers in the league. Like, if you're going to draft from centers, he's not falling past fifth, right? You got Jokic, Joel Embiid, you probably got Bam Adebayo somewhere up in there, Rudy Gobert somewhere up in there. But DeAndre Ayton, at this point, I think I might take him over Rudy Gobert based on the kind of limitations that we see every year with Gobert in the playoffs. So I think Ayton, definitely the player of the week, a guy who I want to talk about later on, specifically in regards to James Wiseman, and if Wiseman can kind of hit that kind of same ceiling and enjoy maybe a similar learning curve to what Ayton did. Go check out tons of other exciting Ultra moments with the hashtag #UltraMoment. Michelob Ultra, 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Okay, back here now with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season with a cold Mick Ultra. Packages that the Warriors could put together for Damian Lillard. Let's start with the draft picks, obviously. 7 and 14. You put those on the table, obviously. Mm-hmm. Any other future first rounders, you just throw them in there.
Unfortunately, they don't have a ton.
I think it's one in 2027 might be the only one, but it's something like that. Throw that in there. For salary matching purposes, now you're looking at a group of Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins. Obviously, I think the guy that you would include would be Andrew Wiggins. And if you're Portland and you're trading Damian Lillard, I think Wiggins would actually be a really good fit because he's still young. You can kind of, you're not building around Wiggins, but you could build with Wiggins. And if it's him and, let's say, CJ McCollum and Yusuf Nurkic, then I don't know, you got something there, right? You've got all your main positions addressed. That to me would be the package. So Wiggins, 7, 14, a future first.
And Wiseman.
If you're Bob Myers, you. And Wiseman. I forgot to mention Wiseman. So you probably have to put Wiseman in that package, don't you?
Yeah.
Definitely. And you do it if you're Bob Myers, right? That's your offer.
I mean, that's just the base level offer of even getting Portland on the phone.
Yeah.
I don't think that's enough. Everything we just mentioned, if you're the Warriors, that's a no-brainer. Yeah, that's a lot. But we're talking about Damian Lillard here, a guy in the heart of his prime who's a borderline generational talent, Hall of Famer, greatest Blazer of all time. You do whatever you need to do. And I think that they would have to do more, though. I think I think you need to think about including Klay Thompson in that. Klay Thompson is actually from Portland. People don't realize that. He spent his formative years in Portland. Didn't move to Orange County until he was in eighth grade. So it's kind of, you can kind of sell a homecoming there as well. Maybe that from Portland's perspective, that would kind of ease some of the loss of losing someone like, ease some of the sting of losing someone like Damian. But I think you need to start thinking like that. If you're the Warriors, you need to be willing to do that.
I think we need to first kind of compare what the Warriors are going up against, right? Because other teams that would want Damian Lillard, right? You think about Toronto. Okay, they could put Pascal Siakam on the table. They could put Fred VanVleet on the table. Whatever first-rounders that they have. They have the fourth pick in this draft, right? So I think what that package would start with, hey, take your pick between Siakam and VanVleet, and you get the fourth overall pick. Maybe you take Jalen Suggs out of Gonzaga at number four, Jalen Green, something like that. That's a player that you could build around more than probably the number seventh pick in the draft. And if it's basically between the fourth pick and a guy like Siakam or VanVleet, and the seventh pick and a guy like Wiggins, I don't care if James Wiseman's a part of that package or whatever future firsts are a part of that package, or even the 14th pick in this draft. If I'm Portland, I'm taking the Toronto offer, right? Because you're getting a better player and a better pick in a draft where there's a very clear top four and a franchise caliber player, where at number seven, you could still get a good player, but I don't think you can get a player like Jalen Green or Jalen Suggs or Evan Mobley or somebody like that, right? There's a big drop off. Miami, right? They have Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. I don't think they would put Jimmy Butler or Bam Adebayo on the table, because that would kind of defeat the point of trading for Damian Lillard. But they don't really have, they would have to unprotect their first round pick to Oklahoma City. Even that pick is a middle first round pick, not a great pick. I don't think that they really get into the door. I don't really think they get into that conversation if everything's even, right? Unless Damian Lillard says, trade me to Miami, and it becomes an Anthony Davis to the Lakers type of situation where there's three other teams that can beat the Lakers offer. But if a star wants to play for the Lakers, they just do, and that's what happens. That would be the only thing short. That would be what's preventing Miami. So I think Toronto, I think Golden State. And then you look at a team like Boston. What if they put Jaylen Brown on the table? Like, what do you do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're Portland, I mean, Jaylen Brown is arguably better than anybody else on the table as far as a player is concerned. And maybe you think you can that Jaylen Brown can make like a Kawhi Leonard type of turn in his career. Then there's teams like New Orleans, where Damian Lillard would be such an ideal fit with Zion Williamson. And they have all those future firsts that they got from the Anthony Davis deal. They have Brandon Ingram there. They have Lonzo Ball, who's entering restricted free agency. You could do a sign and trade type of thing with him. I mean, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and every first round pick they have. That's a really nice package if you're Portland to get back for Damian Lillard. You could put Lonzo Ball, CJ McCollum, and Brandon Ingram on your perimeter with Yusuf Nurkic, and you're probably still a playoff team. Oklahoma City, they can't really put much on the table outside of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But they have so many first-round picks. They have 18 first-round picks.
The thing that Oklahoma City has going for it is they've put them in a position to capitalize if there's a trade partner out there for any of these all-star caliber players who's just trying to just totally reset and just totally blow it up and rebuild. And
we don't think Portland is
It's possible that they could start thinking like that. You know what? Like, let's just start over here. You know, even with Lillard, we were like, I'm not a serious contender. So if we're going to part with Lillard, let's just start over. And, you know, maybe you just get like 10 first round picks from the Thunder and just go that route. And you have a young potential superstar in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But going back to what we were talking about earlier, I do think that Lillard in this situation would have some say in where he goes. And I don't think he'd want to go to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and he's not going to pick going to Oklahoma. No, that's the other thing. That's the thing that Sam Presti and Oklahoma City fans are getting wrong every time. You think you've got all this bait to go get a superstar. Like I said, superstars they get to pick where they want to go now. I don't care if they're under contract, whatever. Whatever you think about that, I don't care. The fact is, superstars generally pick where it is that they want to go, especially if you're one as good as Damian Lillard is. And the Thunder don't have Russell Westbrook or Kevin Durant or any of these players that other superstars wanted to play with, right? They're not good. They're not competitive. There's no roster there. And that's the thing I think that Sam Presti is getting wrong on the Thunder as a GM there, is everybody's giving him so much love for getting all these first-round picks. But you need to build a winning team at some point that can attract these superstar players. Because if not, I don't know that you're ever going to be able to capitalize on these players. And I think what ultimately will happen is that they don't get these superstars. They'll bunch all these players together. Like I could see them moving all the way up to number two or number one or number three in this draft and trying to draft your next franchise player instead of trading for him. But that said, the other team that we need to mention is Philadelphia, Ben Simmons. If they try to move on, they'll definitely offer Ben Simmons for Damian Lillard. But at this point, it feels like the best that you're going to get for Ben Simmons is CJ McCollum. But maybe if you do Ben Simmons and some other stuff, I don't know what they have to trade as far as first round picks and things like that. But that would, maybe you throw in a Matisse Thybulle and things like that. Maybe you get into the conversation. All right. I want to move on here. DeAndre Ayton. His story this year, the way that he emerged as a guy who, like I said, probably one of the top five centers if you're doing a draft of centers in the league right now. And I'm sorry if I'm forgetting somebody because I'm just doing this off the top of my head. But what he has been able to do and be a meaningful, helpful player for the Suns is the model for the Warriors and James Wiseman. And honestly, Connor, it has me second-guessing sort of my stance on Wiseman, which is, you kind of have to trade him or do something with him. And I was never so fully like, you have to trade Wiseman for just anything. But at $8 million a year, $9 million a year, you could get something for him, a player who more immediately helps you. But if you're the Warriors front office and coaching staff and you think you can get Wiseman to develop while coming off the bench, right? Because that's the difference between him and Ayton. Ayton started his whole career. But if you think that Wiseman, even coming off the bench, can turn into the player that Ayton is, then you have to hold on to him. And I think that the Warriors do believe that. Now, they need to be honest with it. I think they're hoping that they could be that. But I still think as up and down as Wiseman's rookie year can be, I'm not convinced that he can't be somebody who's like Ayton. And the thing that stands out with Ayton is that you don't have to run offense through him, right? The Suns aren't running post-ups to DeAndre Ayton. They're not running like face up, hey, take your shot from 15 feet. He is getting everything in the flow of the offense. He's a vertical spacing threat. He's a great rebounder. He's got great hands. He's catching everything around the rim. He's open for every single lob, and he's just a guy who gets buckets without having to call plays for him. And if Wiseman can hit that, then, boy, you're really talking about the perfect fit at center for the Warriors. What have you thought about what Ayton has done in these playoffs and if Wiseman can eventually hit that kind of level?
Well, one of the big reasons why the Suns took such a massive leap this season is actually because they're depending on Ayton less. His numbers are down, his points per game, all those things, but his efficiency is up because he is able to play within himself and get his points within the flow of the offense. He doesn't have too much responsibility, so he's able to concentrate more on defense and doing the little things that serve winning. And it's actually been really beneficial for everyone involved. But I don't fully get the Ayton Wiseman comparison, to be honest. I think they're completely different players. And Ayton was much better as a rookie than Wiseman was. Ayton was always a good NBA player. He was just on bad teams. Even his rookie year, he was efficient. He shot almost 60% from the field. Was averaging over 16 points and rebounds. Like, he always looked like a potential superstar. There was never any question about that. It was just, okay, can you give him a real point guard? Right. Can you put necessary pieces around him? And then obviously you throw in a Chris Paul, and it unleashes another level of his game. But even as a rookie, Ayton had, I thought, a lot more feel to his game, a lot more polish. He's not an elite passer by any stretch of the imagination, but I would say he's a better passer than Wiseman, and always has been. And so I don't think that's a fair comparison. I mean, you also have to keep in mind he only spent 1 year at Arizona, and he came in at 19 and looked a lot better for a 19-year-old big than most 19-year-old bigs do. He didn't look like Wiseman. So I still am not confident that Wiseman will be an Ayton type player in this league.
I hear you. Ayton was a better prospect coming out of college, out of Arizona. There's no doubt about it.
There's a reason he went number one over Trae Young and Luka.
Yeah.
In a really good draft.
That draft, by the way, is looking better and better and better every single, like after these playoffs, Marvin Bagley is really looking kind of like the Darko of that draft. But I do think that the similarities between Ayton and Wiseman. So Ayton is a much better offensive player than Wiseman is. He's got better touch around the basket, better hands, better feel for the game, much more fluid. Wiseman still looks like a baby deer out there at times. Ayton never looked like that, right? He was always in, under more control. I mean, what he's doing in these playoffs right now, he's catching lobs and then kind of scooping layups in and with these finger rolls in midair. I mean, that body control that it takes to do that is insane, especially for a seven-footer. We're not seeing that from Wiseman, but I'm not saying it doesn't exist. The other thing with Ayton defensively is, unlike Rudy Gobert and other kind of plotting centers, Nikola Jokic like that, Ayton's not a guy that gets played off the floor when you play small. Like, the Clippers are trying to go small against the Suns, and it's not working because Ayton is so fluid out on the perimeter. He gets low in his stance. He's got great footwork. I mean, he's such a freak athlete that, you know, I'm sorry, playing Nick Batum at center is not going to take Ayton off the floor where it did with Rudy Gobert, right? And right. I thought when the Clippers went small against Dallas in the first round, it changed the series because a guy like Boban can't keep up. And so I think Wiseman, if he hits his ceiling defensively, could be a guy who is able to stay on the floor. He does get low in his stance. He's got really long arms that he puts that he uses defensively. He can be more fluid. He's got the potential to do that. And that, to me, if I'm the Warriors front office, that's what I'm looking at. Like, oh, we can get a 7-footer on the floor who can finish lobs, hypothetically, theoretically, right, with Wiseman. I mean, you need to work on his hands and his touch around the basket and all those things. But I do, like, there was problems with Ayton's hands when he was a rookie too. I mean, once you start to slow the game down for Wiseman, I think the touch will come back that he showed at Memphis. I think his hands will get better. He'll start catching things more consistently. And defensively, if he could stay on the floor and provide that 7-foot vertical presence, I just don't know that right now you could pass that up and just trade Wiseman for nothing. I wouldn't take Wiseman off the table completely, but I am starting to think, if you're the Warriors front office, you're looking at what Ayton's doing, you're like, that's what we want Wiseman to be, and that's the film you're showing Wiseman, right? Hey, we don't need to call plays for you. Just do what Ayton does. Be available by the basket. This is what your role will be. And that was, to me, the biggest problem with Wiseman is he didn't know what his role was. And the Warriors didn't know what his role should be. I think watching Ayton should give them an idea of what Wiseman's role should be, and they should try to fit him into a similar type of role. We'll see if it works, but I think that they should try.
Yeah, yeah. Steph's a very different player than Chris Paul, but
I think Draymond Green plays the Chris Paul role, right? And, like, Steph is almost the Devin Booker type.
I understand what the point you're trying to make now, which is, and it's okay. Sound. I wouldn't compare them, but in terms of the role and how he should be used, I agree with you. But once again, my question is, does James have the natural feel for the game that this read and react system demands? And the jury's out on that.
I think Ayton's more talented than Wiseman.
He's way more talented. I don't
think there's a doubt about that. Yeah. So, but Wiseman's very talented.
He is very talented, but all right. Ayton has Hall of Fame potential.
If Ayton got there in year three, I think Wiseman is probably 4 or 5 years away from getting to where Ayton is now. So I'm not saying, but if you're saying Ayton could be Hall of Fame potential, I don't know that Wiseman can hit that. But if Wiseman can just be what DeAndre Ayton is right now, that's really good. You know, if he just stops right there, if that's just what he is, that's not bad for the second overall pick in that draft. And so, but like I said, he's probably, instead of 3 years away from getting there, I think he's closer to 4 or 5 years away from getting there if he's going to get there at all. All right, I want to talk about the NBA draft really quick, but first let's talk about Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. The NBA playoffs are on, and even though the Warriors aren't a part of it, you can be. Take a look at the spreads, the money lines, the over-unders, and more at BetOnline. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all of the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Let's also take a moment to talk about Rock Auto. With an ever-increasing number of vehicle makes and models, it can be impossible to stock all of the parts you need for your car at a traditional store, so do it easily online at rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all of the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Then write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. All right, we're back here with Connell Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle, celebrating the Tuesdays as we always do. Remember, starting July 19th, the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian Scalabrine and former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts will make selections and trades for your favorite basketball teams throughout this week-long special event. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all of the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. All right, how can the Warriors nail this number 7 pick? And if they do nail it, would that be enough to turn this team, based on what you've seen in these playoffs and what you're seeing around the rest of the league and everything that we've talked about so far on this show, Connor, if nailing the 7th pick enough to take this Warriors team and getting Klay Thompson back up to the top of the Western Conference again?
I mean, depends on what you mean by nailing it. Like, is it just an absolute coup at number 7 and ends up being this generational player that no one was expecting? And yeah, sure. That, I guess that's possible. And yeah, that would be enough. Yeah. But is that likely to happen? No. I mean, if by nailing it, you mean they get good value at 7, which I think is realistic. You know, if they get like a very helpful rotation player next season and a guy who can be a long-term part of their core, but maybe isn't necessarily like a perennial all-star. I don't think that's enough. No, I don't. I think that I still believe that they're a big swing away, like an all-star caliber guy who fits away. And I don't think they're going to get that at 7. At least someone who can come in day one and be that, you know, maybe you can get someone who can be that in a few years, but by then you're talking about the end of this aging core's prime. And, the window is now. So, you know, at 7, you know, we've talked about Davion Mitchell. He's a guy who I think would be really helpful for this team next season, but he's not what they need to be legitimate contenders. No.
Right. I don't think just nailing the 7th pick overall is enough, but I do think it can go a long way in filling out the rotation the way. I don't know if they're a big swing away from getting back to where they want to be. I think what we've seen in these playoffs is it's a little bit of a war of attrition, right? You need to stay healthy. You need to have a deep lineup. We saw this from Phoenix, right? You get Chris Paul getting the coronavirus. You've got Devin Booker playing with broken nose, and they still have enough to get there. And to me, that's the model, not to keep saying that the Warriors should build themselves like Phoenix. But you kind of do want to do that, right? Where you have 10 guys who you trust, and you suffer one injury and you could still survive. And that's kind of what the Warriors were during their dynasty years even. I think that if you are able to get a guy at 7 who can contribute immediately, and we see this every year, there's guys, right? There's Tyler Heroes, there's Tyrese Halliburton's, there's guys who get into the NBA and they're just good from day one. And I think that's the type of player that the Warriors should be going for, regardless of upside. Like, even like Jonathan Kuminga is a guy who seems to be falling out of top fives in a lot of mock drafts and stuff like that. And if that smoke is real and he's there at 7, I still want to take him if I'm the Warriors. I'm sorry. Like, I'm just, you're never going to be able to, even, I don't care what you think of his upside. You don't have, you're not going to be able to get him to tap into that upside because you're not going to have the playing time available for him to reach his potential. I think you just need to get a Damian Mitchell.
A ball stopper.
Yeah, and it just doesn't work.
This isn't what the Warriors want.
Right, and so I think you need to find a guy at 7 who you think, a perimeter guy specifically, who can help fill out that part of the rotation. And the big part to me is, and it's unavoidable, if Klay Thompson isn't 70% at least of what he was, I don't care what you do, because you can't have a $30 million contract on the books and also $30 million owed to Andrew Wiggins, who is a good fit for this roster but not worth $30 million. If you have two guys basically making $60 million who are worth a quarter of that, I don't care how you fill out the rest of this roster. It's just not, and how good Steph Curry is or how good Draymond Green becomes or is. It doesn't really matter what you do. It becomes really, really, really hard to get back to the top of the Western Conference when you have all these other teams that are sort of ascending the way that they are. That's not to say that they can't get there, but Klay coming back is going to be huge. If and what he looks like when he comes back, and then getting the most out of not just the seventh pick. You probably need the seventh guy to be the eighth or ninth guy in your rotation, and then you need to go out in the offseason and somehow, some way, get a bona fide sixth man. I'm not talking about Jordan Poole. I'm not talking about, you know, Juan Toscano-Anderson. Get a veteran who knows how to play in the playoffs and has that kind of experience, because right now those guys don't have that, and you need a guy who's more like Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, multifaceted, three or four tool type of player who you know can do it when in these final 5 minutes of the playoffs, which are all these games are coming down, like the last 4 or 5 minutes, and that kind of tells you who can stay on the floor in these games. We don't know that Jordan Poole and Juan Toscano-Anderson could stay on the floor in those games because we haven't seen it. You need to go get a guy who you've seen do it, has proven it. That to me is the biggest thing. But the seventh pick would be huge, not only in potentially going and getting that guy, you could trade that pick potentially for that guy, but if they can use the seventh pick to get more of an eighth or a ninth man who can be in your night-to-night rotation, that's going to be almost as big as getting that six-man type. All right, let's wrap up the show here with La Tuesday Trivia. What we're going to do here is a brand-new segment that we are debuting with Connor. So on La Tuesdays, here's the thing that you guys don't probably don't know about Connor. He has this encyclopedic type of memory for where dudes went to college. And you say, oh, yeah, well, of course he does. Like, who does, if you're an NBA fan, you should remember where. No. Connor knows guys that I haven't even heard of on certain rosters, and he's like, oh, yeah, he went to this college that I've never even heard of in the middle of Chicago or something. Like, it's unbelievable. You and I sat at games together in, like, you know, the middle of the second quarter when it's just boring, and I'd be like, what about that guy? And you'll just rattle off the name like that. So it's impressive, and I want to bring it to the podcast. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you five players, and I ranked them to what I thought was easiest to hardest, okay? And these are players who are currently... Yeah, all of them are currently in the playoffs, okay? So they play for teams that are in the playoffs right now. So one of these final four teams. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Starting with an easy one here. Terrence Mann.
Florida State.
Okay, that was an easy one. Solomon Hill.
Solomon Hill went to South Florida. No, Solomon Hill went to Arizona.
Arizona.
Sorry.
There you go. That's fine.
Arizona. Sorry, there was another guy with a similar name, Solomon something, who went to South Florida a few years back. Solomon Hill went to Arizona. Counts, right?
That definitely counts. I'm giving you the points there. And just so you know, I will never put a USF person in this list. So just if you ever think a player went to South Florida, that's not going to happen.
Arizona,
I'm actually surprised
to
put
myself.
Arizona's in there. I'm surprised I put a Florida State guy in here, honestly. I probably should have reconsidered that. All right, third one. Javon Carter
went to West Virginia.
That's right. Number four, Langston Galloway, who I was surprised played for the Suns. I had no idea he played for the Suns.
St. Joseph's,
you're right. All right, I think I made this one too easy for you. All right, final one. Milwaukee Bucks shooting guard, Sam Merrill.
Utah State.
I think I made that too easy. I'm shocked you got that. All right. Are you ready for the bonus one?
Yeah.
Torrey Craig.
USC Upstate.
Oh my God. I can't believe you got all those.
South Carolina Upstate.
I never even
played in Australia.
Yeah. I thought I should have put Torrey Craig on there. Well, you got six. I told you five.
I'm actually very annoyed with myself for taking a second to get Solomon Hill. But I got it. That counted, right?
It counted. No, you're six.
I got them all.
You're six for five because you got the bonus.
Yeah. I was actually wondering if you're going to ask about Torrey Craig because I think that might be the most random.
That was the most random.
NBA.
I hadn't even heard of it until I looked up at Torrey Craig. All right. Strive for greatness every week, Connor. Thank you so much. No glitches next week. Apologies for the technical difficulties there at the end of the show. This has been Locked On Warriors. You could follow Connor Letourneau at @con_cron. If you are a minor league baseball fan or just a fan of sports or narrative storytelling or just Connor's work in general, do go check out his three-part series on what's going on in minor league baseball right now and all of those things. Part two came out Monday morning, I believe. Connor, if you want to just give the elevator pitch on that before we go.
Yeah, part two gets into just the harsh realities that many minor leaguers face on a day-to-day basis. I focus the story on a guy named Brett Auerbach, who is a utility player for the San Jose Giants, undrafted guy who's kind of cracked the everyday lineup and is trying to get by on below minimum wage and just kind of detailing his situation to spotlight what a lot of these guys have to go through to pursue their dreams. And, you know, it's been exacerbated by the coronavirus, and I try to, it's pretty in depth and it's A1 of the paper. Definitely try to pick up a copy, read it online if you can. And then part three is coming out next week, and that'll get into Marco Luciano, who's the Giants' top prospect, and the difficulties that Latin American prospects face in pursuing their major league dream.
That'll do it for the Tuesdays. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and say nice things about the show. Make sure to subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel, Locked On Warriors, now on YouTube. So watch the show, subscribe to our channel. You can reach me on Twitter at WC Goldberg, where I'm not verified, or by email, wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Enjoy your day. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Connor.